But in my opinion, the really real end game of this is for DeFi and crypto to become the back end of fintech. If you look at fintech today, fintech is a very sleek front end, but in the back end of it, there are all banks, and you should do it in the most fair and transparent way. And we think that the M0 construct, the way we have designed it, can redistribute the economics in a way, fairer way compared to current centralized systems, where pretty much the issuer keeps 90% of the pie.
We've teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for 200-plus multi-chain teams. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click from blue-chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the WIF versus BONK. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, source off-chain, and broad on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders. Marinade is a staking protocol on Solana, and the only stake pool that delivers auto-rebalancing, MEV rewards, and automatic downside protection with new protected staking rewards. Optimize your SOL stake with Marinade by hitting the link below.
Avalanche is a smart contract platform that has a novel consensus protocol, subnet infrastructure, and the Hyper SDK toolkit, which allows Web3 developers to easily launch custom, powerful blockchain solutions. You can start building today by checking out the link below.
Before we get into today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in this episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or other advice. All right, let's jump into the episode.
Welcome back to another episode of 0x Research. Today, we have a great episode lined up with Luca, the CEO and co-founder of M0, which offers a new crypto dollar product called M. Today is Thursday, April 19th, but this episode will likely go live the first week of May. As a reminder, be sure to use code 0xresearch at app.blockworksresearch.com for 10% off your annual subscription. On to the interview with Luca. Thank you so much for coming on, Luca.
Thank you guys for having me.
Before we get started and dive into it, could you explain what M0 is and how it works?
Yeah, I'll try to do it in a couple of sentences, but I think in the long run, we hope M0 to become the true decentral bank of DeFi. What do I mean with that? I think what we hope for M0 is to be a set of rules, smart contract enforced, that would allow anyone to bring eligible collateral and mint a fully fungible crypto dollar. We don't really like the term stablecoin. This has many implications. It stops fractionalizing liquidity, has the ability to bypass a lot of the financial infrastructure overlay that is used in today's stablecoin, but not really needed, and hopefully can create a true global dollar-based financial ecosystem.
Interesting. Could you describe the process for minting and redeeming M, like the life cycle of a transaction?
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, there are many layers and layers of complexity, but in its simplest form, a minter who is a smart contract permissioned to access a minting engine provides a proof of reserve that a certain eligible collateral exists somewhere. This proof of reserve needs to be validated by at least a third party or a validation smart contract. And following that proof of reserve, the minting engine gives the ability to the minter to mint a subset of that value in M form. Let's make an example a bit more practical. There is an approved minter that can strictly prove, and then we can get to that in a second, but can strictly prove that there are, let's say, $100 million worth of US Treasury bills in a compliant container, and the protocol will allow that minter to mint less than $100 million, call it $90, $95 million worth of M, that is fully fungible, doesn't have the face of the minter, and can be distributed in the open market freely without any blacklisting functionality or any way for governance or protocol or regulator to actually confiscate that dollar. And on the way back, when the minter wants to close this transaction, it can purchase or access the M floating in the open market, bring it back to the protocol, burn it, let's say, through the protocol, and access the collateral back.
Gotcha. That's a helpful explanation. I did have one curious question on some of the numbers you mentioned. So you mentioned in your example, $100 million of collateral, and he'll be able to mint $95 million of collateral. Is there always going to be a sort of quote-unquote like loan to value, or like you're only able to mint less than 100% of your collateral, or would you be able to mint like one-to-one the dollar value of your collateral?
I think there is going to be another question after that, and we will get in the nuance of how money is created, but I'll park that in for the moment. The first part of the answer is I don't know, because what we are creating is actually a decentralized governance system where governance has the ability to parameterize the protocol the way governance is fit. Now, in my opinion, it should never be the case. I think that a floating M should always be a subset with a loan to value less than 100%, as you mentioned, of the eligible collateral that has been posted in the ecosystem, which is, by the way, the way financial markets work today. When you have one-for-one collateralized fiat-backed stablecoins, that fiat, which is actually the money generation, has been produced in an under-collateralized fashion by a bank. So the leverage, the LTV that you mentioned, is actually with a depository bank. And it would be like someone who actually purchases M in the open market would deposit in another smart contract one-for-one and produces another stablecoin. So that leverage, that lack of leverage or one-for-one collateralization is already existing somewhere else in the financial system these days.
Gotcha. I appreciate that explanation. And another thing I wanted to ask is, from my understanding, minters are going to be a permissioned entity at launch. So how are minters going to be selected at launch? And perhaps what are some of the considerations you guys sort of thought about when selecting these initial batch of minters?
Yeah, as you can imagine, we thought extensively about this. When we designed the protocol, we wanted to design a protocol that was as modular and future-proof as possible. So yes, governance can whitelist which wallet addresses can be permissioned as minter. But in abstract fashion, this whitelist can be infinite, right? Can be completely open by governance in the future. But we don't think that that should be the case today. So, and why? We are strong believers, first of all, that money is a B2B2C product. There are centralized parties that bring collateral in large scale. They post collateral in large scale, they manage it in large scale, and they distribute it in large scale. And these institutions are also better equipped also from a regulatory perspective to do that. But this doesn't mean that the distribution of the stablecoin should actually be controlled by the minters after they mint. So the reason why we think that minters should be permissioned is that today, in the world we have today, it is very difficult to patrol the quality, the regulatory compliance, and the ability to manage collateral of, you know, an arbitrary number of people. So I think that's, we are believing a B2B2C model. But that shouldn't be the future in the future forever necessarily. I think when more and more and more controls will happen on chain in a composable and fully transparent way, we think that the pool of potential minters could definitely expand.
Gotcha. That makes sense. Just following up then is sticking on the point of minters, right? So for example, like a stablecoin like Circle and Tether, there is like one centralized entity and they are like the centralized minter and redeemer of their respective stablecoins. Given that M will have multiple minters permissions through this governance system, what are some of the key risks that users should be aware from minters? Because, you know, like with Circle, it's very easy that you're trusting that like one entity, whether like however trustworthy you think they are. But now with M, it seems like there's sort of like multiple sets of trust assumptions because you have multiple minters.
Yes. And I actually think that things are a bit more complicated than that, even by design, because to trust. So as when M is free to float in the outside world, as we mentioned before, M cannot really be confiscated by anyone. It's not that like in the case of Circle, someone can push a button and blacklist the wallet address and pretty much confiscate the balance of that wallet address. That means that the only aspect that a user should consider from a risk perspective is whether there is accessible backing of that stablecoin in a safe place. And I think the way we are ensuring this is not only by decentralizing and diversifying the risk coming from the minters, which are the issuers and the redeemers, but also creating other classes of actors, collateral storage venues, validation venues, etc. So we are trying to create a network of not always independent actors or classes of actors that are actually kind of controlling each other in a way that doesn't exist today. So we think that the best way to diversify the risk and increase the transparency of a model with one issuer that has one balance sheet that is always kind of opaque because it's quarterly attestations and has 2-3 custodians or bank custodian banks, etc., is actually to open the set of minters to create this competition, but include also a set of collateral storages that are independent from the minters and a set of validators that are independent for the first two. So I think that is also the reason why, to your point, Rand, before, we wanted to limit somehow the number of parties that could come and perform those actions, so that in order to trust the backing of the stablecoin, you need to ensure that the parties that are playing those roles are trustworthy. And obviously you don't want to do this oversight for thousands of parties, but for 5, 10, 15, 20 parties. And ultimately, the fallback of everything is social governance and governance oversight. And that's why we also spent significant amount of time designing governance mechanisms and thinking who should actually be the governor of this system.
The governance, I've went through your white paper quite heavily, and I think this is the first time that I've seen like a stablecoin focus so much on governance. I think it might be the only example of a stablecoin focusing this much on governance. But before that, could you kind of dive into the validator set a little bit more? Are they basically an oracle set that comes to consensus and verifies the off-chain collateral, or is there other nuances in there?
I think, first of all, like we will definitely talk a lot about governance, and there are reasons why we're spending so much time on governance, also linked to our past in the ecosystem. But the validator set, yeah, definitely. I think the validator set should be seen as in two aspects. First of all, yes, we are aiming at having a consensus validation for the on live proof of collateral. And just to make this more real, what we are expecting is that we will have daily on-chain attestation of the reserves provided by third parties for anyone to review the backing of a stablecoin. We are hoping to have, we actually have abstracted the role of validator because we are hoping to have more and more research from our labs company and others on how we can actually do very robust consensus validation. But also, those validators have a second leg, which is way more traditional, where those validators are actually auditing the real structures where the collateral is stored. So to make an example, if you want to be a minter, an approved minter in the system, and we will provide guidance. I mean, this is very boring stuff, but it's very important. We will provide guidance to governance. As a minter, you should bring your independent collateral storage, which is typically a regulated entity that works in the securitization market. This is not the first time. We have an asset manager that uses an independent storage. The securitization market has been working with this for decades. And also, you need to make sure that this collateral storage, this SPV operator, has a third-party independent validator that ultimately has the contractual ability to look into the securities account and co-sign what exists in the structures. So what we're trying to do is making collusion and opacity more and more expensive for the parties. So if you want to have, if you want to mint an over, like an under collateralized or a badly collateralized stablecoin, you need to, as a minter, you need to corrupt an SPV operator, which is also a regulated entity, and that was also going against the law. You need to make sure that they do the same with a separate auditor validator. And then you need to make sure that governance is either very lazy or very unqualified or actually corrupt itself. So we are really trying to make more and more onerous and more difficult with parallel checks and balances the corruption of the system.
One more question that I had, like, regarding the mechanics is currently, from what I've seen, the only eligible collateral is 30 to 90 day US government bills. Is there, so from what I understand, you guys are eventually planning on making this all decentralized so the governance would decide on what collateral can be added. But how do you see this evolve? And like, is there a framework that you have when you're thinking about eligible collateral?
Yep. I obviously have my own opinions. I think the foundation of the M0 Foundation will have its own opinions and governance will have its own opinions as well. But let's start from me. There is a very simple reason why we decided to start from the simplest possible type of collateral. First of all, because it's very simple, there is de facto zero credit risk where you're thinking US dollar terms if you're actually backing a credit by T-bills. Because yes, the US Treasury might default, but if the US Treasury default, the dollar itself is worthless. It's the most liquid and largest asset market in the world. It's the easiest to underwrite. And it's the easiest to start bypassing what banks do, because ultimately this might be not immediate for everyone, but what we are trying to do with M0 is bypassing an unnecessary commercial banking layer in the production of money. Now, will this collateral pool evolve? Yeah, we think so. And that's also why we didn't call the stablecoin token produced by M0 USD, whatever, but we called it M, because we think that M is a unit of money. Today is backed entirely by treasuries because it's easy, because the market is huge, but in the future might be backed by other assets. Now, if you ask me, what do you think should be those assets? And also, like, the last point is it's also very profitable because now those treasuries are yielding 4-5%. So it's actually, there is a huge tailwind. And I mean, we're not the first ones. We might have been the first ones to talk about it. I've been discussing about it at length, but other products have worked on this for like less complicated but faster to market solutions. So this is not a new concept. But in the future, in my opinion, we should think about the evolution of the eligibility criteria in the same way we would think central banks to evolve their eligibility criteria for their own reserves. I think central banks have been including some commercial paper in their reserves. Central banks might include Bitcoin in their reserves, they include gold in their reserves. So I think that the reserve policy will probably evolve and become more sophisticated, but I really hope that this will not become actually a discount window for bad credit or illiquid credit to come and ask for cheap financing. And we have seen this in crypto. We have seen when crypto has opened the windows of liquidity, so-called tacky credit or revenue-based financing, which is very difficult to underwrite for good reasons, pitching itself to be a good collateral for stable coins. I've seen it myself at Maker. I spent a lot of time in the Maker ecosystem and people might know me at Maker. So I hope that is not the direction. And we actually have created the M0 Foundation and will provide financial resources to the M0 Foundation because we really want the M0 Foundation to become a think tank that publishes research about how global money should be backed.
Yeah. One more thing on this topic is that I was reading through, I think it's your latest research. It's about money and how it developed. And one of the things that you mentioned is, I don't want to butcher it, is that you don't think that crypto and endogenous collateral mechanisms are going to prove to be popular. I agree with you, but I kind of wanted to understand like how you think M is going to fit into the landscape of crypto, because in my mind, it feels like there's like very decentralized ones in the sense that they're backed by ETH, and then there are like more centralized entities. How do you see M fitting into all of this?
So first of all, I think that endogenously crypto native collateralized stable coins might or might not scale, but definitely they will not be able to scale today. They are too cyclical, and actually this goes against the concept of money in the first place. So we have seen it with Maker again, for example, in the bear market. Maker became de facto a wrapper of USDCs. Now, where do we think M would sit? I think first point is where do we think M would sit today and where it would sit in the future? I think today there is a huge space to provide a better and more transparent version of dollar-pegged stablecoin. I think that this market is absolutely dominated by one party that does one thing very, very well, which is liquidity to settle retail trades, which is Tether. It might not necessarily be the best to do other things. And if you even talk to large whales in crypto or large market makers in crypto, they will most probably tell you that they trade with Tether, but they store their money with US banks. Now, I think that there is a huge space now to provide a better alternative, but this is the typical cold start problem, right? You need to start, you need to provide liquidity. We have very, very strong partners from an equity perspective and a market making perspective. Some we can make public, some not yet, but soon. So I think we are in a very strong position to tackle that. Also, this market is $150, $200 billion. Even from a crypto native perspective, will probably become $1 trillion. So there is huge potential for credible alternatives to emerge. But in my opinion, the really real end game of this is for DeFi and crypto to become the back end of fintech. If you look at fintech today, fintech is a very sleek front end, but in the back end of it, there are old banks. You have like fancy new banks. Most of the times they have old partner banks and correspondent banks, and it's very complicated, it's very costly. We think that crypto should become the rail of choice of fintechs. So if you are providing a financial product through a front end in emerging markets, for example, you can do this on USDC rails. You can do this on M0 rails. And I think in order to do that, you should try to be the best possible dollar rail, because the business of those fintechs is not actually to trade, but it is actually to provide a product for their business, for their clients. And you should do it in the most fair and transparent way. And we think that the M0 construct, the way we have designed it, can redistribute the economics in a way, fairer way compared to current centralized systems, where pretty much the issuer keeps 90% of the pie. So I think that there is definitely space for a better and more transparent and better distributed stablecoin layer today. There will definitely be the need when larger institutional pools of money come in the next 1 to 5 years. And in the next 20, I think we should definitely bypass the banking, the commercial banking rail. I think banks will just become utilities. And for this, we need better middlewares. And that's what we are aiming to build for.
Gotcha. That's a fantastic explanation. So it seems like M and M0 is sort of aiming to be this sort of neutral base layer where anyone can come in, provide this eligible collateral and mint their own stablecoin while obviously capturing sort of like the inherent yield that a lot of the collateral that backed stablecoin has. One interesting point that I saw on your blog was that a few minters make potentially use M as a distribution channel for their own product. And for example, wrap the M token in their own, for example, wrapper into like another crypto dollar or like another crypto contract. Do you think that's going to be very likely with either like in the long term with like the new minters where they want to sort of like own their own sort of like crypto dollar? Or do you think most of them are just going to buy into like M and sort of tap into like the existing M liquidity rather than like fragmenting it through like their own wrapper, and why?
So we are agnostic to that. That's why we have designed the product like this. But we are anticipating it. And one of the reasons why we called M is because we thought that M could be raw material for something else. Even if this happens, actually liquidity still is less fragmented because there is a uniqueness of money that is guaranteed at the back end, which is a bit like the discount window of central banks work today. You know, every money is kind of different. In the different banks where you store the money, there is a different credit risk, but everyone can go back to the discount window and use it. I think this will happen because I think one thing that we think the M0 construct can be very good at, which is guaranteeing an evolving and distributed collateral pool for the quality and the stability of the coin. There might be other ways. There may be other things where other overlayer protocols are better. For example, peg stability or leverage or distribution within certain layers. So we think that partnering with other protocols that build on top should definitely be a winner, and we will definitely incentivize it.
That makes sense. And then obviously, value accrual is relatively important for crypto protocols these days. It seems like the retail market is slightly more aware of sort of like value accrual dynamics and sort of the token utility there. And at least for M, there are two types of protocol fees. The first is a minter rate, and the second is a penalty rate. Would you mind diving into both of those a little and sort of like talking about the potential value accrual there?
Yes. The North Star of this is trying to avoid as much as possible any risk of undercollateralization. So actually incentivizing minters to keep a healthy level of overcollateralization for M. So that's why we have included a minter rate and a penalty rate. But how does this work? So if you are minting M, by providing collateral, you're actually paying the protocol a fee that is proportional to the amount of M that you have minted. For the finance people, the TradFi people listening, it is like a repo. You post some collateral that has a yield. You get financed by a liquid form of debt that has a cost. Why would you do it? Because the yield of the asset is actually typically higher than the cost of the liabilities. You can buy more asset to these liabilities, so you're actually levering up in a healthy way. This is how the wholesale market works. So this minter rate is absorbed by the protocol and redistributed partially to earners and the rest at disposal of token holders. Without any DAO, without any decentralized treasury, but simply can be swept by token holders. Now, if the collateralization ratio temporarily exceeds certain thresholds, or if the validation and the proof of collateral isn't done properly, the mintor keeps accruing a penalty rate, which is an incentive for the mintor to behave before it is actually expelled by the network. So that this incentivizes riskier behavior. Ultimately, governance is the ultimate decision maker. It can push out orderly a minter. But I think the idea here is to incentivize healthy collateralization. And also the minter rate is captured by the protocol in the same fashion. So it's very simple. The M0 minter engine is a centralized facility for healthy financing and absorbs a fee in order to provide from those that uses this facility. And this fee is distributed among the stakeholders of the network in a way that maybe we can discuss later, guys, if you're interested.
Wormhole is the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain bridges and applications. With over 1 billion messages sent and 40 billion in value transferred, Wormhole leads the industry in cross-chain message volume and total value transferred. If you're a builder, Wormhole has an extensive suite of tools and infrastructure to securely build multi-chain applications. You can use Wormhole to power DeFi, NFTs, governance, and so much more. And Wormhole supports over 30 blockchains and 6 different runtimes. Claim your unique Wormhole NFT just for 0x Research listeners today. Fill out a form, prove that you've listened to today's episode to receive a Pro app, and you'll get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT. Pair is an innovative pair trading exchange built on top of Simio. Users can trade trending narratives with one click from blue chip narratives such as long BTC, short ETH, right through the WIF versus BOP. The hat stays on. Simio's intent-centric architecture enables deep liquidity, source off-chain and broad on-chain, and combined with Pair, has democratized access to complex trading strategies typically reserved for institutional traders. Marinade is optimized Solana staking. Stake natively or liquid stake with Marinade and get the same high performance delegation strategy that thousands are using today to stake your SOL to over 100 of the best Solana validators. The delegation strategy is a first of its kind and only possible on Solana. It delegates your SOL to the network's best validators with no smart contract risk. In addition, Marinade has just built a new and improved delegation strategy that delivers maximum performance with auto rebalancing, MEV rewards, and automatic downside protection with new protected staking rewards. And this allows for maximum decentralization for Solana too. Optimize your SOL staking today with Marinade by hitting the link below.
The age of interoperability is here. With the launch of Teleporter, Avalanche becomes a seamlessly linked network of many sovereign blockchains that communicate so smoothly, they feel like a single chain. Teleporter is an EVM-compatible cross-chain communication protocol built on top of Avalanche Fork Messaging. It allows any EVM chain on Avalanche to send messages, assets, and data to one another in a simple, fast, affordable, and secure way. Teleporter and Avalanche Fork Messaging provide a new foundation for how Avalanche blockchains can communicate and how developers can easily build cross-chain applications out of the box. Build anything you want, any way you want, on the eco-friendly blockchain designed for Web3 devs. Check it out by clicking the link below. You kind of already touched up on this with integrations as people build on top of them, but one of the most important aspect of like stablecoins is in DeFi is integration and composability. And like, how do you CM, or like, what is your go-to-market strategy for broad on-chain utilization?
The way we have divided this in order to tackle the problem is in thinking about supply and demand. So who is actually producing money and who is using money? And for producers to be attracted by the trade, there needs to be significant demand for money to be distributed into. And we are trying to work at both sides, on both sides at the same time, because obviously you cannot have a lot of demand if there is no supply. Demand will get frustrated and vice versa. And at the same time, we're trying to work on the liquidity of the stablecoin itself, because obviously liquidity is, at least in the short term, the characteristics number one for a stablecoin. I would say that solvency is very important, but unfortunately you realize when that solvency is important when it's too late, typically. So we are working on these three legs at the same time. On demand, what we are doing, we have been starting to work on demand from the very beginning of this protocol because we have been designing and the protocol in a way that is more as friendly as possible with the protocols that use it. So for example, the fact that AMM doesn't have a blacklisting functionality in a native shape for us was very, very important. We know that blacklisting hasn't been used much. We think that AML and source of funds should definitely be done in the ecosystem, but we do not think that it is the best way to do it is to provide one agency, a switcher, to actually bring down a whole ecosystem. So the fact that there is no blacklisting functionality natively in AMM facilitates the use of AMM as a settlement asset in many other ways, for example, on sidechains, on rollups. And you don't really want your rollup to be switched off by one agency that doesn't like your rollups. So I think what the blacklisting functionality was an example. The solvency is another example. The ability to direct earn yield in a more targeted way was also an example. More pragmatic on this point, we have considered the ability for the protocol to redistribute part of the yield that is captured by the protocol itself, that ultimately indirectly comes from the asset. So, you know, it's a bit like when people think about yield-bearing stable coins, there are different ways of doing it. Now, the reason why we actually ask governance also to whitelist which wallet addresses can be earners is not only for regulatory compliance, but it's also because we think that it's easier not to have a modular approach. I make you an example. Let's say that there is an asset-backed yield-bearing stablecoin product out there that just automatically gives yield to the stablecoin holders. Now, this product can be very complex to manage from a regulatory perspective when it goes around the world. It can be very difficult to be created liquidity against. And sometimes this cost doesn't really have a benefit, because I would argue that in crypto, people do not really care much about the 2, 3, 4% yield when for retails, because retailers use this to trade and they have a way higher risk appetite. In the construct we have designed, let's say that a large exchange has been permissioned on the platform, on the protocol. When a permissioned wallet address of this exchange will keep earning. But as soon as the asset leaves the exchange wallet address and goes into the user wallet address, this functionality stops. That means it is way easier from a modular perspective to be digested by distribution venues instead of like fully monolithical stable coins. This is another example. So we have been spending a lot of time in designing this in the most credibly neutral and way in order to allow use cases to build on. But I mean, we could have many examples. The other side is distribution. We see that a lot of the large distributors are doing the heavy lifting for stable coins because they are actually providing liquidity for stable coin pairs, but they are not benefiting from most of the economics. And we are convinced that our distribution venues will start more and more to get interested in having their own stable coins. You know, Binance has done it in the past. PayPal has agreed on a partnership with Paxos, but we have many others. And market makers have been starting to move in this space. So I think we think this will fractionalize liquidity significantly. So we think that we created this platform to be the most credibly neutral technology for distributors to build stables on. We hope that large distribution venues will all have stable coins that are powered by the M0 ecosystem, and they will capture most of the economics, right? The M0 protocol will not be predatory on the economics. The M0 protocol, as a set of standards, wants to be very large.
Gotcha. No, I really think that's interesting how you could think about sort of like distribution and the demand and supply dynamics. One question I did want to ask was blacklist, right? I feel like you mentioned that a lot of times that M does not have a blacklist functionality. However, in most cases so far, at least for centralized stablecoins like USDC and USDT, I feel like I've only seen blacklist utilized in sort of like a positive manner after a exploit or a hack. So I wanted to ask, sure, I can understand like how you don't want like a sort of like centralized, like perhaps like censorship vector to the stablecoin, but why not have that be controlled by, for example, governance instead of like a centralized entity?
So on your first point, I agree. I mentioned also before that the blacklisting functionality hasn't been used much in the past. And I also think that the birth of this functionality is actually more accidental than people think. But we just think this is not good design. I think that we should build compliance protocols and frameworks on top of core minting engines of stablecoins and not within. I think it's all a matter of modularity where you actually put certain functionalities in. I think this is the beauty of DeFi and crypto in general. So for us, design is important because we are such a young space and still niche. We don't really know how these functionalities will be used in the future, and especially more and more if we believe that this is going to be the basis of for global financial services. Ultimately, it will become also a political weapon to have certain functionalities embedded within the financial system. I think we have had similar examples in telecom with like 5G servers and etc. I think it's a good analogy. I think on the governance aspect is because we really believe that governance should stay away as much as possible from managing core value for the protocol. I think we cannot really get away without from governance, because I think that certain things, especially today, require social consensus and monitoring. I actually spent some time after my Maker days researching and writing about governance systems in hyper complex situations that are not actually minimizable in algorithmic decision making. So I think we need governance. That's a short version. But I think governance should really not have nuclear buttons as well, because it's very risky. So we think that this shouldn't be in the hands of governance. In the way actually governance in M0 works is a preemptive, let's say pessimistic governance. So if you're not adding value to the ecosystem, governance pushes you out, but pushes you into an orderly wind down. It doesn't capture your value. I don't think anyone would like that. But also, we are not against, again, creating additional functionalities for financial products or products in general. We just think this should be layers, layer after layer, at the periphery of the core protocol. So we are, we think that going back to your wrapping and building on top point, we think that there will be other use cases for M that need to be compliant or need require additional functionalities people will build on top, but without breaking the core liquidity and fungibility of the M token. We really think that M should be raw material, core material for other use cases. And also when it comes to the ability to divert funds from a risk management perspective, this is very important, but this should be in the right place.
If I were a DeFi protocol, whether a PerfDex and AMM, a lending borrowing protocol, right, what would be your like 2-sentence pitch for my protocol to integrate MB?
I would say 3 things. I would say, first of all, that what we have created is the most neutral tech platform with the highest potential longevity as a product. The second one is that it will give the ability to distribute yield better. And the third one is that we think that the team of professionals and investors and partners we have put together is the highest quality possible in crypto. And we think that this is very, very important to create network. I think we started M0 by raising a seed round, which at the time in the middle of FTX was one of the largest seed rounds of that period. We raised $22.5 million with Pantera leading the round, but also great investors like ParaFi, like Standard, like Hack, like Road, like AirTree participating. The reason why we chose those guys is because we had very deep connections with them, with most of them, doing our maker days. These guys love stables. They understand stables. They use stables. Now M0 has around 50 people working, including some of the early builders in the MakerDAO ecosystem, the former head of product for pretty much forever of USDC at Circle, people coming from the Compound experience or from TradFi. I think this team is incredibly high quality, and we are working very hard to expand this family even further, bring in the highest quality strategic partners in the mix as well. So we think that network is crucial in crypto. We want to build the team that has the highest firepower to build network effects for a stablecoin. And I think, you know, stablecoins or money in general is the ultimate network product. You need ability to do network in order to have value. You can have the best product in isolation, but without the ability to create a network around it, there is no value. So I think these would be the three things plus a fourth. So technology number one, ability to be fair in distributing yield number two, ability to create network number three, and then the fourth one is M will not blow up your protocol. And I think if you are building a protocol and the stablecoin is something you absolutely need in your construct, but you do not want to carry someone else's risk, M will not blow you up. And I think this is quite important through the cycle for teams that are thinking longer term.
Yeah, that last point is, I think that would do it for a lot of people. I think especially if, as the cycle, maybe we'll see. I don't want to get too deep into that. But governance-wise, you guys have, as I mentioned before, you have probably like the deepest governance framework that I've seen for a stablecoin. Could you kind of run us through the two-token governing system and why you decided to go with that?
Yes, absolutely. And this is the child of Greg, one of the three co-founders of M0. So I hope, Greg, if you're listening, I hope I'm not doing too bad of a job. The reason we spent a lot of time on governance is that we have felt on our skin the problems of starting a protocol that becomes successful with a bad governance construct. And many, many, many projects, they start and they say, yeah, we will fix governance later, and then you never fix it. It's a bit like giving the power to a very powerful general in a military coup, and the general will give it back to the people. And then surprise, surprise, he decides it's better if he runs the country himself. So we shouldn't get the generals there in the first place. We have worked extensively in the DeFi ecosystem and have noticed on our skin a few problems. The first one is lack of participation. Even decentralized, distributed governance systems have very few people participating, because most people are actually buying governance tokens because they want to trade them or they want to stake them. So the merge of the economic utility and the control utility of the token is creating a lot of problems. I have seen this on my skin. I was in the Maker ecosystem, and I was actually advocating for more checks and balances in the ecosystem. Might have been a good battle or not a good one, it doesn't matter. But that vote was the most participated vote in DeFi history. I think I don't remember how many hundreds of millions worth of tokens, of MKR tokens, participated. Pretty much every large institutional investor voted on one side, but the total float of tokens participating in that vote was probably 20%, 25%, and this had never been done before. Rallying 20% of tokens for a vote. So currently, large holders of governance systems control typically 2, 3, 4, 5%, and is enough to outvote everyone. So there is a problem there in actually apparent decentralization versus effective control. The second one was the difference in the time horizon and intentions of the holders of those tokens. There are some that are very active and are very engaged, others that are just sitting for economic accrual, etc. And the third one was the distribution of those tokens. I do not necessarily believe in very complex, flat, democratic systems where everyone is actually arguing about very complex things. It becomes a very difficult political game. And that was what has driven us in the design. And the design has a few very basic concepts. The first one is splits the voting ability and the economic ability of the tokens. So the M0 system, the two token governor, as we call it, has a voting token that is called the power token and a utility guardian token that is called the zero token. The voting token requires participants to actively participate in governance. If they do not participate in governance, they will be heavily diluted and very quickly. The zero token is less punishing on the dilution, but doesn't give holders controlling powers apart from emergency high quorum votes where the economic stakeholders, they want to reset the system because they think the system is actually going in a very bad direction. So the reason why we're doing this is to really split these two cohorts. There might be traders and stakers that are really interested in one token, but not in active participation. And it ensures that voting has a very active and always evolving cohort. We think this is not, I mean, and again, this is not new. We have a lot in the capitalist system. We have many people that are interested in the upside of a company, but they do not really want to participate, or they do not have the ability to participate in governance. So we think this was very important. And the last point is how we decided to distribute the tokens. The tokens haven't been distributed yet, but we will be way more targeted in the initial distribution of the tokens, because this is a path-dependent equilibrium. If you have a wrong distribution at the very beginning, it might actually impact the evolution of the system itself. And you know, we spent a lot of time on governance because, as you mentioned, we think that good money ultimately comes from governance. You know, the US is the most trusted financial system in the world. It's not only because it has an army, but because it has good governance. And if the governance of the US gets very bad, and the central bank and the treasury start getting colluded, etc., the value of the US dollar would go down. So in order to ensure a healthy and long life cycle for the M0 powered money, we really wanted to spend a lot of time in governance. That costed us a lot of time and a lot of money. And many investors asked us why, but we are long-term thinkers. And we hope that others will build on the same, you know, we will open source our governance system. We hope that others will build on the same concept ideas or modules that we, in pure crypto spirit, we are sharing with the rest of the industry.
I wanted to follow up there and continue to ask some questions about governance. First of all, I think BlockWorks Research spends a lot of time in like various DAOs and different governance systems. And there's clearly a big difference between just participation and sort of active / good participation. Participation is just sort of voting on like random snapshot votes without much of an opinion, whereas active and good participation is, for example, hosting weekly delegate calls, actively having discussions in the governance forum before the post even makes it to the snapshot. How do you think about sort of incentivizing like those two different types of participations? Because ideally you also want sort of like the active discussion instead of just, you know, like, sure, like having a large percentage of the token supply vote on votes is good, but at the end of the day, like, you still want sort of like an informed vote rather than just like someone chucking their vote out. So how do you think about that?
Yeah, I would say, like, you know, the difference is like participation farming, participation-led farming, and real participation in protocols. You know, and I myself, I spent a lot of time in DAOs and researched DAOs from Maker, but also Lido and Nouns, that to me was one of the most fascinating governance tests, at least at the very beginning, etc. I think how we differentiated, we cannot have a perfect differentiation. I think we can reduce the, first of all, we can reduce the incentive of parasitic participation. And the two token governor also goes in that direction. I think voting has some level of liability. And while on chain, the protocol rewards participation through token distribution that is permissionless. We think that really for institutional type of players, the real game is not in that token class, but in another one. So I think we wanted to reduce the incentive to farm through participation. I think it's also, again, I think that it's always it's always a nuance. It's also the way you actually think about emissions and token distribution in order to avoid predatory participation to farm tokens and move on. We are really long-term thinkers. We think we will pay for this long-term thinking in the short term, especially in a bull market. But, you know, we have wide shoulders, so we can sit and wait. But also, so the how aggressive you think about parameterization is going to be very important. But then I think from a foundation perspective, and M0 is not only a protocol, a foundation is actually like a labs company that is in a very lively manner creating APIs and software to connect to the protocol. We never talk about that, but I think we're spending a lot of time and we have a lot of engineers on that side. But let's park that for a second. I know that crypto people are more interested in system design rather than software. But we will do a lot of work from the M0 Foundation to keep this debate lively. We will do a lot of work by publishing, by researching, by engaging in conversations. We really want the M0 Foundation to become the reference think tank for stablecoin research in crypto, period. And if this will come through grants, this will come through suggestion to governors, this will come through additional projects. But I think this will be, there is no secret sauce. I think this will be most of the work from an ecosystem perspective at the foundation, because it's nourishing high quality and fostering high quality participation is an ongoing effort. It's not something that you create a great system to do that and then it goes on its own. So I think we will live and see, but we started by designing a system that we hope would have improved the existing flows of crypto gamified governance or financialized governance systems. But this is just the beginning. The rest is humans as usual.
Yeah. The idea of the think tank, the M0 Labs think tank, you mentioned that you want to see think tanks participate in governance. Could you kind of expand on that a little bit? And because it ties into what Ren said as well, you want both active members. But I think think tank, from what I understand, is like a very, very active member, to the point that it's more so focused on thought pieces and research. Is that what you're envisioning? Just third parties coming in and discussing stablecoin research and design as part of the governance process as well?
Yeah, we will incentivize this also probably through a grant program, but we would hope universities, some of the rating agencies that are spending significant time here to publish and research. I mean, I'm an example of crypto, a crypto native group that I really respect, because I saw the guys flourishing from day one is like Stakehouse. I mean, the guys from they spun off from MakerDAO and are doing a lot of the financial work for some of the very best protocols. I have a lot of respect for those guys, but we we would love to see this product researching and analyzing very specific aspects like collateral eligibility criteria or certain parameterization characteristics, etc. Now, how do we incentivize those groups? I think it's going to be a combination that will keep evolving. Exposure, if the M0 protocol will be a very strong protocol, I think it's going to be good for them. Grants, we want to fund, our project is well, very well funded, hopefully it's going to be even better funded. And we want to use this for high impact initiatives. And delegation, we know that large financial investors do not really want to be fully engaged in governance, because for them there is significant liability in doing so. They just want to protect the governance of certain protocols because they want to protect their investment. But we think that those same token holders might sell or delegate token power to more informed parties. And also the protocol, we mentioned before that the protocol has an automated DAX auction system where tokens that should belong to participants that do not participate are auctioned off automatically by the protocol. We think that groups that want to actively participate in governance will invest certain resources to actually capture part of the voting power. I think it's going to be a combination. But we also think that certain parties that want to connect to the protocol to do stuff, like certain validators, certain minters, certain distributors, they might want to buy a seat around the table because they want to protect their own network. And I really hope that we will have a combination of independent research houses, other think tanks, university type of researchers, and strategics, market makers or distribution venues that want to participate because they want to protect an infrastructure that they benefit from, and not necessarily governors that want to buy limelight or actually they want to capture economic benefit necessarily that are emission by the protocol.
Interesting. So I think one kind of last question that I have for you is, I understand that M0 is a base layer and that it's going to be decentralized, but what do you hope/think it should look like over the next, like in the next, let's say, 5 years? What would you, in your ideal scenario, have hoped that M0 has achieved?
I think in 5 years, M0 should have $100 billion of value. And I think it should be supported by a set of independent and independently flourishing minter validators and collateral managers. And I think that in the future, while M0 as a network will remain, because as an ossified network will remain, the base layer will evolve a lot. And I mentioned before the fact that the M0 Labs company, which is a tech company, is working a lot to create tools for institutional parties to come and connect and do stuff with the protocol. I hope that by doing that, we will allow very large institutions to come and play in crypto. Because we think sometimes that crypto doesn't care about certain characteristics, but I think we are really not thinking big enough. It doesn't care in the current scale. I think the current scale of DeFi is probably one eighth of JP Morgan's balance sheet. If we want this system, this space to go to like 50x or 100x, it will care. And our ambition is to help bringing this ecosystem from a DeFi perspective, because we're DeFi nerds, but the ecosystem as a whole, ready to really absorb the financial market of the future. And this is what we are hoping for. What I'm hoping for personally is that as a builder, I am currently CEO of the company, of the Labs company. I hope that my governance weight for the M0 protocol will be immaterial in 5 years' time. And I hope that better and smarter and more technologically savvy parties would have acquired the Labs company and grew the Labs company into really a powerhouse of software as a service for fintech backend, and that I will just exist in the ecosystem to keep researching and helping other teams to do what I think crypto can do. I'm personally not here for the quick buck.
Okay. A noble cause. Is there anything else that you would like to mention to our listeners, specifically maybe the APIs and the software that you guys are building?
I think from API and software perspective, not much. I think we would like to unveil progressively what we have been doing. We focused on the M0 Foundation with our website and starting to focus on research. Soon we will focus on what another corner of the company is doing. But what I would like to tell people is, very simply, if there are listeners among you guys that are long-term thinkers and want to build for projects that are really very ambitious and they have the best of the best investors, builders, and engineers in the space building, you should call us, because we are looking for people like you. And you know, a lot of people that I have the pleasure to work with at M0 met me through my research, because I was recovering from a very, very hard disease in isolation, and I started writing research about DeFi, and that changed my life. And I think it's very important to have other people that think and research and publish and communicate through channels high quality content, because it might not farm Twitter likes, but reaches the right people out there. So if there are people like this in marketing, communication, building, design, business development, engineering, you should call me, because our team is growing.
Perfect. I think that's it for the day.
Thanks a lot, guys.
We have teamed up with the Wormhole Foundation, stewards of the Wormhole Protocol, the leading interoperability platform powering cross-chain transfers for over 200 plus multi-chain dApps. Wormhole isn't just a bridge. It's the leading interoperability platform for multi-chain applications. So go and claim your unique Wormhole NFTs just for 0x Research listeners today. Hit the link in the description to fill out a form and to prove that you've listened to today's episode and receive a PoApp. You get an email over the coming weeks to claim your limited edition NFT. We'll be right back.